My guest today for Listen to This is Professor Thomas Studebaker. He is professor of voice at the Central Michigan University School of Music and brand new, just arrived last fall. Thanks for joining me today and welcome to CMU. Your timing was perfect, by the way.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So as professor of voice, you teach applied voice or private voice lessons. Do you teach other classes too?
Yes, I also teach vocal techniques, which is a class that's basically designed for instrumental majors who need some idea in case they get thrown in front of a high school choir or something like that when they're the band director. That's becoming something that happens pretty often as school systems are trying to save money. They'll have someone do both, and so our instrumental majors need to have some sort of background in that. So we have this vocal techniques class set up for that. And then also I teach what's called a studio class, which is people from that are just from my studio, my private students, where we get together once a week and sing for each other. And I run that similar to a master class situation.
So are you teaching in person now?
Yes, we are. We actually have been all year. I've been very happy about that. I feel like the students get, it's much easier to teach that way. They get a great education that way. And CMU has been fantastic about the way they've handled everything. They've kept our numbers down. They have taken every protocol in the book, and it's worked. And where a lot of other places are online, we've managed to stay in person and keep our numbers down, and it's worked very, very well.
How do you work that out with your students, the logistics?
Well, the university has given us bigger rooms for our applied lessons. So rather than teach in the studio, I mean that some of the students opt for the studio, which is okay because I remain masked and a pianist remains masked. My students are allowed to take their mask off when they sing, except that we stay social distanced even at that point. And I'm very careful, between students. I've got a Lysol in here. I spray the room and everything and my door handles and all that good stuff. But in a larger room, it's much easier because it's a very large room and the student stays pretty far away from the pianist and me. So it's worked very, very well for everyone.
That's good. And so you're enjoying it so far at CMU?
Very much, very much. I have fantastic colleagues here. Mm-hmm. The students are wonderful and they work hard for me, and that's all I can ask for.
So you are a tenor, and a tenor, let's let listeners know that a tenor is a male singer who sings in the upper register of the voice, the high notes. A baritone is a bit lower, and a bass has that very deep voice. And there are lots of different kinds of tenors. There are counter tenors and lyric tenors and Irish tenors, and you're a
Helden. And leggeros and spintos,
yes,
all of them.
Yes.
Yeah, tons.
You are a Helden tenor, which means a heroic tenor. That sounds like the Superman of tenors. What does that really mean,
really
a Helden tenor?
We always say we're the spear and magic helmet guys. The Helden tenor, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's the Helden is the German word for hero. What that is, our Fach is basically we sing Wagner, Strauss, Beethoven, Mahler, that kind of thing. It's basically the Germanic stuff. Do we cross over some into the Italian rep? Yes. Otello, perhaps Calaf in Turandot, that kind of thing. Some of the heavier Italian rep we would do, maybe even Canio and Pagliacci, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly what we do is the German repertoire. And a good portion of us were baritones before we were tenors. We kind of call ourselves baritenors.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us were baritones, and our voice, after a time, our voice began to move back up. So a Helden tenor, just by virtue of the fact that he was a baritone, generally has a little bit more baritonal sound, even though he's a tenor. He has more of a baritonal sound in his sound when he sings, and that's sort of what delineates a Helden tenor from the rest.
Well, thanks for that, and I plan to talk about the voice a little bit later, but first of all, is it just me, or in operas or other productions like Broadway shows, is the tenor the good guy and the baritone or bass is often the bad guy? It's like the lower the voice, the more sinister the character.
The more villains they
yes.
are, yes. That happens from time, a lot, actually. The lower voices will either be, the fathers or the doctor or, yes, the villain, of course. You think Tales of Hoffman, things like that. But very often the tenor will be the hero. And sometimes, I mean, I know there are times when the tenor is not the nice guy. The first role I ever sang as a tenor was a drum major in Vosek, and he's really a horrible human being. So we're not always the hero. although I'm not sure there really is a hero in Vosek. It's all very sad.
Yes.
But there are times when we aren't the hero, but more of the time than not, yes, I would say that the tenor lead is the one who ends up being the hero at the end.
Well, speaking of heroes, let's listen to a little bit of music that inspires you.
Okay. Well, the first one I would think, if you're talking about heroes, I would think of Die Walküre, of Siegmund, the role of Siegmund. One of my favorite recordings is from the Schulte Ring with James King as Siegmund. I had the good fortune to actually get to work that role with him. When I was singing in Chicago, a friend of mine was my cover in Chicago, and he had worked with King. And I actually asked, I asked him if he thought he would be amenable to me actually coming down and working with me. He said, yeah, he's a great guy. So the two of us drove down together, and I called him up, and he said, yes, please come down. He was at Indiana University at the time. And I went down, and we had the good fortune to actually get to spend time with him, and I got to work the entire role with him. So that was really one of the things that inspired me more than anything. But one of the things that would probably show him best in that is the beginning aria, the beginning of Act 1, Scene 3, Ein Schwerter hieß mir der Vater. James King is the tenor, singing with Regine Crespin as Sieglinde.
Let's listen.
That was James King singing Ein Schwerter hieß mir der Vater, the aria from the beginning of Act 1, Scene 3 of Wagner's Die Walküre, with George Schulte conducting and Regine Crespin as Sieglinde.
And that's my guest, Professor Thomas Studebaker, professor of voice at Central Michigan University. Thanks for being my guest today for Listen to This here on Afternoon Classical here on WCMU. Tell us a bit about where you've been and what you've done before coming to CMU.
That's a long story. I grew up in a very musical family. My father was a voice teacher, my mother a pianist. One of my brothers is a choral conductor. So I came by it honestly, and my parents knew pretty early on that I could sing. And I pursued a music major in college, graduated from Illinois State University, and then did my master's at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. I did some singing actually after my undergraduate degree. I started off in choruses, did a lot of work. Opera Theater St. Louis gave me a real break, and they took an interest in me from early on, and I had the good fortune of working with wonderful people down there who gave me my start and helped me really launch my career. But from there, I sort of moved up the ranks. They let me do that. I started in the chorus, and then I started doing supporting roles, and by the end was doing leading roles for them, and that helped me get the experience that I needed. Unfortunately, all of those were as a baritone, but then they ended up giving me the Richard Gaddis Fund for Young Singers, which afforded me the opportunity to pay for my voice change because my voice was moving up, and what they did basically was fund that so I could work with my teacher. I actually took 6 lessons a month, so I worked very hard, and we did that for a year, and then I continued to work for about another 6 months before she said, okay, it's time for you to go and sing for the Met and let them hear you. And I sang for Gail Robinson, and she said, yes, we'd like for you to be in the Young Artist Program. And they did that really to keep me from running out and singing things that were too heavy for me early on. So they really, the Met really did me a service by taking me into the Young Artist Program. And from there, that really helped me solidify a career and move out and begin doing things in other houses, bigger roles and that kind of thing.
Wow, it sounds like you had some great mentors along the way that really helped you along and recognized your gift and helped you make the most of it.
I have. I've been very fortunate.
So everyone knows how to get to Carnegie Hall, right? Practice,
yeah.
Practice, practice.
Practice, 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 yes.
How do you get to the Met? Do you audition, or were you just recommended by your teacher, or do you, you know a guy, or how do you get to the Met?
Well, it was a little bit of all of that. Of course, the first thing is the same way that you get to the Met as you do to Carnegie Hall. You practice, practice, practice.
A lot.
But the thing is, my My voice teacher was very well connected in the business, and one of the ladies, she knew Gail Robinson, who was the head of the Young Artist Program at the time, and she called Gail and said, "I have this young tenor. He's just made the switch up from baritone. I'd like for you to hear him." And Gail said, "Okay, send him over." And a lot of people get into the Met, you know, by way of doing the National Council auditions, and then they will maybe go into the Young Artist Program from there. And then from the Young Artist Program, move into roles the way I did. There are other people who just go by way, you know, they'll start in regional companies. They'll even start singing bigger roles in regional companies. And then their agent will get them auditions and they'll sing for the Met. The Met will say, okay, we'd like to hear you on the main stage. Very often they begin with list hall auditions, and then they'll move them to the main stage, and then they hear them in the main stage and decide when they hear them in the main hall whether or not they want to hire them or not. So there are different ways to get there. The New York Times actually did a thing on the program years ago that they called entering the Metropolitan Opera through a side door, which was about the Young Artist Program and how we move through the program. So there are a number of ways to get there, but they all sort of begin on the same road, and that's a lot of hard work and perseverance.
What's it like to sing at the Met? How does it feel to step out onto that stage?
Pretty scary. The first time I actually sang on the main stage, I did an audition, and I sang on the old Trovatore set, Pavarotti, Milnes, and Martone were singing that night, and I was terrified. I got out there. The proscenium was carpeted, and I was afraid they weren't going to hear me past the pit. And it turned out those walls along the side are rosewood, and they take your voice and throw it like a baseball. And so they actually could hear me fine, but I was terrified, and I think I breathed from about my neck up. But you can't see very much in the house because of the side lights. They're very bright, and so you can't see much of the house when you're on stage. And when the lights come up and you can see how big that hall is, it's a little terrifying, but you get used to it, and it's a great place to sing. It's the hall itself is pretty live, and once you get used to it and realize that you don't have to oversing in that house, it's a good thing. But terrifying at first. But once you get used to it, you get to the place where there's no place you'd rather sing.
Oh, what a great story. Yeah, wow. Let's listen to some more music.
Well, one of the favorites of mine that I have always listened to from very early on, one of my favorite singers is Fritz Wunderlich. He was a German lyric tenor. He sort of owned the role of Tamino in Zauberflöte, in my humble opinion. And his rendition of Dies Bildnis ist bezaubernd schön is, I think, one of the most beautiful things I've about ever heard. This is the German tenor Fritz Wunderlich singing Tamino's aria Dies Bildnis ist bezaubernd schön from Mozart's Die Zauberflöte.
And thank you for helping me with the German pronunciations. Let's listen.
Natürlich, kein Problem für mich. That was the German tenor Fritz Wunderlich singing Dies Bildnis ist bezaubernd schön from the first act of Mozart's Die Zauberflöte.
And that's my guest, Professor Thomas Studebaker, professor of voice at the Central Michigan University School of Music, for Listen to This here today on Afternoon Classical. Again, Thomas, thanks for being here with me today. Thanks for taking the time.
Sure, thank you.
You mentioned that you grew up in a musical family. How did you come to realize that you had this very exceptional talent or gift for singing?
Well, my parents realized I could sing pretty early on, as I said before, and so I just decided when it was time to go to college, I had to sort of make a decision as to what I wanted to do. There were a few things that interested me, forestry and pharmacy among the rest, but pharmacy, my math grades weren't the best. That was clearly not something I was going to follow. But when it came right down to it, I actually did the did my auditions to see if music school was the idea, and I got a full ride to go to school, and it turned out once I got going, and by the spring semester of my freshman year, I sang my first opera and loved it. It was Gianni Schicchi by Puccini. And turned out I the bug sort of bit me. And then after my sophomore year, the summer after my sophomore year, I began singing in the chorus at Opera Theater St. Louis. And that was sort of the nail in the coffin, as it were. There was nothing I could think that was any more fun than that. The St. Louis Symphony in the Pit, John Nelson, we did Idomeneo, I was in that, and John Nelson conducted that. I was also in Barbara Seville, and Leonard Slatkin conducted that. So to have those kind of people in the pit, and then to have all the great singers that opera theater has traditionally hired and still does, I was sold as a 19-year-old kid. I was pretty impressionable, and it was very easy to go, wow, this is what I want to do. And turned out that's what I ended up doing.
And what a nice launch to such an exciting career for you, too.
It was. I was very, very lucky, and to get to, like I said, to get to move up the ranks in that company was a real honor.
So on our occasional series here, Listen to This. So far, we've learned about the viola, the bassoon, and the tuba. So if you would, let's consider the voice as an instrument. We all have one, or most of us have one anyway. And first of all, people who perform songs, sometimes they're called singers, and sometimes they're called vocalists. What's up with that?
Tomato, tomato. They can call them what they want. I mean, singer is a singer is a singer, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. They can call us vocalists if they want. Maybe vocalists is something that's a little bit more, a term that's a little more stuck to maybe popular music or jazz, something like that, versus, just sort of general, everybody that sings is a singer. A vocalist might be somebody that has that nomer based on the genre that they do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say there's really anything different between us until you start separating our genres.
Well, that's a good answer. That's one of those things that, sort of like fiddle players and violinists, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So, as I said, most people have a voice, and some folks have been given a Stradivarius model, and others not so much. Do you think the voice is kind of a nature or nurture thing? Could everyone develop their voice?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone can develop their voice. Anyone who says, I can't sing, just hasn't tried. They haven't worked on it. Do I believe that there are some voices that are innately, sort of inherently better than others? Of course. But I also, because it has to do with the physical makeup of the instrument itself. But do I also believe that everyone can improve and become a better singer? Absolutely. I always enjoy teaching people who are just in my studio just because they want to learn how to sing. Be it a private student in my private studio or someone who's in a university student who is majoring in, international business and says, I really like to sing. I think for my elective, I'd like to take voice lessons. And they come in because they want to. They tend to work really hard and they really enjoy it. And they tend to improve exponentially because of that. So I think somebody who really wants to do that, regardless of the innate makeup of their instrument, is going to improve. So I think, yes, everyone can.
Well, I think one of the saddest things I ever hear is when someone, usually an adult, says that they won't sing, and it's because maybe their third grade teacher told them they couldn't and told them to just fake the words during the Christmas program or whatever.
Yeah.
So they never experience the joy of just singing.
Yes, well, that's true, and that's sad. And I hate hearing that story, too. I hate it when people are squelched from an early age from singing because it's something that we all can do and all should do if it's what we want to do. And so when I hear about people that won't sing because, I got told early on that I can't. Well, who told you that? And did they have the credentials to make that call?
Well, afternoon classical listeners know that I encourage singing along and air conducting, too. And I'll tell you a little mm-hmm. secret, Thomas. I do it all the time. I put my headphones on when I'm in the studio here. I turn the microphone mm-hmm. off. I crank up the volume. And, when I do that and just sing along, I know that I sound just like Renee Fleming or Natalie Dessay or any of the Broadway singers on our Footlight Parade program. And, when I air conduct the Chicago Symphony, Cleveland Orchestra, Vienna Philharmonic, they respond to my every gesture. and I know it's the same for our listeners, too. You know, it's just fun. I encourage it. And it's especially now, it's just an important, you know, we're in a pandemic. It's winter time. Just let it out. Sing along, air conduct, and have fun.
Absolutely. And people, you know, I mean, I think it happens when somebody is singing along. Let's say you're singing in, I don't know, some sort of community sing, whatever it may be. If you have some people that are in the audience who are really good singers and are singing out, it tends to make those who are a little bit more timid sing out more too. So yeah, I agree with that. Put your headphones on and let her rip.
Yeah. Someone who plays an instrument like a viola, bassoon, a tuba, a piano, a horn, they'll be sure to take care of the instrument. They keep it cleaned and tuned. They oil the valves, grease the slides, and that sort of thing. What do you do, and what do you tell your students to do to take good care of your voice?
Well, the thing about ours is our body is our instrument.
Right.
And so we have to do things, you know, we have to eat right. We have to exercise. I unfortunately have been guilty of not exercising as much as I normally do since the pandemic hit. But, you know, that's no excuse. I need to get there and do it. But that, you know, eating right, exercise, a lot of water. Keep hydrated. It's very important for the voice. The other thing is when you get sick, I tell students, you know, once you're sick, if it starts to play on the voice, don't try to push through it. You have to let this illness pass and not try to sing through it, because if you do that, you push and you end up with edema on the cords, and all that does is make it worse. We actually talked about that in my vocal tech class just yesterday. The other thing is sleep. We really need to get good sleep, restful sleep, and because that's when our body regenerates and our voice is no different. And if you realize, if you think about it, I mean, you make your living with your voice the same as I do. And when you're tired, your voice is the first thing to check out. And the reason is because our body realizes that we don't need it to survive. So when your body is overtired, it sends energy to other things and not the voice. And so the voice starts to sound a little like Peter Brady when his voice changed. So, you know, that's one thing we have to wrestle with as singers, is making sure that we are taking care of all of those things. Whereas if you have a little bit of a head cold and you're a pianist, you might be able to sit down and still play, you know, a Mozart concerto or sonata, something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great advice, and all of those things are just good things to do anyway. And, you know, I always say that musicians are like athletes. We really have to take care of ourselves.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Well, there are some more singers that have obviously taken good care of themselves and their voices. Let's listen to some more music of your choice.
Well, one that would come to mind that we just lost in the recent past was Nikolai Gedda. He was one of my favorite tenors. And we were talking about pianists. One of my favorite pianists is Alexis Weissenberg, and they got together in the mid-60s and made an absolutely wonderful album together of Rachmaninoff songs. And this is Rachmaninoff's Harvest of Sorrow with Nikolai Gedda and Alexis Weissenberg.
Thomas, what are we listening for? What should listeners keep an ear out for as far as tone and vocal quality and phrasing? What should we listen for?
Well, listen to, like you said, phrasing. You listen to the phrase sort of build, and you hear a connection from note to note, so it doesn't sound what we would call choppy. You want to hear what I call roundness or warmth in the sound, where there's a lot of what I call dome. We keep a high, soft palate when we sing, so that gives the richness and the fullness and the quality versus being a little bit what I would call a shallow sound or a nasally sound. Those are things to listen for. You want to hear evenness in the sound from top to bottom so that the sound matches from top to bottom. And, you know, people like Wunderlich, Gedda, King, they all do that beautifully.
So here's tenor Nikolai Gedda with pianist Alexis Weissenberg singing Rachmaninoff.
Well, for me, one of my favorite tenors, and really for just sheer animal excitement in the sound, was an Italian tenor named Franco Corelli. Corelli sang, we were talking about all the different kinds of tenors. Corelli was a spinto. He was one of the heavier tenors that sang a lot of Verdi, the heavier Puccini. He sang Calaf and that kind of thing. But he one of my favorite things I ever heard him sing was a recording of an old Italian song called Cuore Ingrato. And I wanted to be sure that your audience got to hear it because it is just, it's such great singing and so exciting. He was one of those guys who could get away with scooping a little bit when he sings. If my students do that, I always tell them Corelli was the only one who was allowed to do that, and you're not Corelli. So here's Franco Corelli singing Cuore Ingrato.
That was tenor Franco Corelli singing Cuore Ingrato, and that was a favorite of my guest today, Professor Thomas Studebaker, who is professor of voice, brand new professor of voice at the CMU School of Music. And again, thank you so much for taking the time with me today and for our listeners here on Listen to This on Afternoon Classical here on WCMU.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
There are so many different kinds of singing. There's opera, Broadway singer-songwriters, blues singers. Is it the vocal technique that makes each sound so different? I mean, recently on our program Footlight Parade, the host Bill Rudman featured opera singers that, air quotes here, crossed over and did Broadway tunes. And in his opinion, some were more successful than others. And, you know, we can all think of, and let's not mention any names here, but singers who may not have the prettiest voices, you know, pop singers or singer-songwriters, that are very popular. But what's the difference in all of those voices besides, like you mentioned, the physical instrument?
Well, in truth, my father was a voice teacher, and one of the things that he said that I have agreed with my whole life is he said there's only one right way to sing, only one, but there are a million roads to get to it. But once you understand how the voice works and you learn that way to sing, you can do about anything with the voice. You can decide to go into any genre you choose, and then you learn the approach to that genre, whatever it happens to be, whether it's classical, whether it's pop, rock, Broadway, whatever, it doesn't matter. But once you learn how to sing in a healthy manner and in a way that is conducive to good vocal health, it opens the door to all of those different things. And that's why I recommend that anyone, regardless of their, what it is they want to do vocally, that they learn the basics, the basic foundation of singing first.
How to actually use your instrument and take care of it.
Exactly.
And then
exactly.
You go from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's great advice. And I like how you mentioned that you have people who are not, you know, music majors or plan to be professional singers, just coming to you because they want to learn how to sing and experience the joy of singing.
Yes. And those people are so much fun to teach. But, you know, they're also I have music education majors who have decided that they want to do music education for their living, so they don't want to be professional singers. But they need to, you know, particularly if they want to be choral conductors, they need to understand how the voice works and how to sing themselves. I've always sort of believed that how can you hope to teach something you haven't done yourself or don't know how to do yourself? But the one thing, my music education majors are great, and they're very focused on what they're doing, and they understand what it is they want to do, and so they understand that this is a very important facet of what it is they want to pursue for their career. So it doesn't matter if you want to be a professional singer or if you want to be an educator, or if you want to be, you know, someone who sings in the church choir after your day at the office. If you want to study, it's the way to do it. It's just to go and do it because it's what you want to do.
Yes. And, you know, I hope that soon we will be able to get back together and sing in the church choir or the community choir, because it is such a, it's fun, it brings people together, and it is such a joyful thing to do.
It is. It is. And we all miss that with the concert halls and opera houses all being dark since March. You know, we're pressing a year, and I think that's a very important part of who we are as human beings is the, you know, the ability to appreciate beauty and to be able to experience that. And when that's taken away from us, I think we feel it pretty profoundly.
Yes, that's so true. Professor Thomas Studebaker, professor of voice at the Central Michigan University School of Music. It has been so delightful to talk with you today for Listen to This. And you've shared some great music from some of your favorites and some of your story, too. I hope that we hear a lot more from you very soon, both here on WCMU and in person.
Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure.